Today on Movie Wallace, we talk about Tomb Raider, The Death of Stalin, and Pacific Rim Uprising. It's time for Movie Wallace. This is Joe.
Hi, it's Rashmi.
And you as well.
Movie Wallace is your week. There's a film reviews, movie news, and general banter in theatres, on DVD, online streaming, or on the back of an airplane. If you love the movies, this show is for you. Greetings all.
Hello.
Hello.
Feels like a long time.
We say this at the beginning of
every podcast.
You know why? Because we still haven't hit our groove for 2018. But I feel like some of that's been travel related. Some of it's been movie related, because March, up until March, everything was just sparse and all Oscar focused,
and now it's a waterfall,
and now it's just gone crazy.
Now it's like drinking from a fire hose.
Yeah, I mean, I think in the first 2 months they just dumped all their crap, and now the better stuff is coming out.
Yeah,
although there have been some
good films.
Yeah,
there've been some doozies. Yes.
Yeah, kind of interested to think what you guys thought of these three movies in particular, because
They could go either way.
It's been a while since we saw them all as well. Our personal schedules have interfered with the recording of the podcast in a timely manner. So
the joy of being together.
Now that we're back together, yes, that you've returned from your travels, Rashmi,
back from my travels.
Back from your travels, India, Montreal. I've been traveling with Rashmi too.
Yeah. And here we are.
So, without further ado, we're not going to do a Netflix pick this week. I think we have a couple of catch-up podcasts, I know. And it's funny, because I was actually going through Netflix last night, and there is tons out there. So
there's one movie in particular I've seen on Netflix recently, which is just amazing. So
go
I can't
on.
Wait to
tell us.
Should I?
Yeah, go on. Go for it.
It's called
Ignore the rules that we set here.
Yeah. Who who follows rules?
No, I'm just. I say one thing, and then Yazzie just goes in the opposite direction altogether. You
know, how many half points is this gonna be?
As I want to do. It's a movie called Tu Hai Mera Sunday, or the English translation is You Are My Sunday, and it's an Indian movie, and it's absolutely delightful, and it's about a group of six teenagers. Youngsters in Mumbai who are looking to play soccer, and they can't find a place to play soccer.
Oh, how interesting.
And the movie kind of starts on that premise, and then it follows the lives of all five of them and what's going on in their lives. Very modern, very of the time, very un-Bollywood-like. It's got a great heart, very understated.
Interesting. Is soccer popular there?
I've heard of this. Have you spoken about this before, Yasti?
Yeah, pretty popular, yeah.
No,
I have not.
You haven't spoken about it? Okay. No. The premise sounds really familiar. But no, that sounds great.
Yes.
I know I've been watching rather a lot of soccer lately to Rashmi's chagrin. You know what it is? It's the antidote to CNN.
Why do you need an antidote?
Oh, God, please don't start. Let's not start. Okay. That's a debate for after the podcast.
Okay. Well, just to whet people's appetites for a possible future debate. I'm so tired of television news running 24/7 in the house, because there's oftentimes not much to report. I can get what I need from the news in a 20 or 30 minute BBC news segment. After that, there is no more news to report.
There
I don't need pundits endlessly analyzing.
These are hard times, Joe.
Exactly. That's why I said let's times. Not. This is a debate for another time.
Okay.
Let's for a future podcast where perhaps we don't have as much as we have today to talk about. So three movies, Tomb Raider, The Death of Stalin, I should say, and Pacific Rim Uprising. Which would you like to talk about first?
Okay, and I have the intro for that. So this is a reboot of the original film that came out a few years ago now with Angelina Jolie. But this is Tomb Raider, and the intro is basically Lara Croft, the fiercely independent daughter of a missing adventurer, must push herself beyond her limits when she finds herself on the island where her father disappeared. So this is directed by Ro Uthang, and it has, I know, what an interesting name. Yeah. And it is Screenplay and story by Geneva Robertson Dworet, Alistair Siddons, Evan Doherty, and Geneva Robertson Dworet, which I said that. I think she wrote the story and then the screenplay was written by a group of people. So cast is the main people, Alicia Vikander as Lara Croft, Dominic West, Walter Goggins, Daniel Wu, Kristen Scott Thomas, and a whole host of others. So I'm going to throw this one to Joe first, given you are the gamer amongst us.
Well, past tense. I mean, I don't game as much as I used to, although I did pick up the Tomb Raider reboot.
Because they did a reboot of the game as well as the movie,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, yeah. So, you know, the Tomb Raider is a franchise that's been around, I think, since the, you know, could I even say the late 90s? The Lara Croft character, I think, originally was this kind of bimbo with big pistols. careful use of words there, by the way. That would run around and, you know, she was kind of a female Indiana Jones, kind of badassery. They rebooted the franchise, I think, in 2013, 2014, on the game side with a Lara that was much more human. This Lara got injured. The game was very much focused around her struggles in becoming the Tomb Raider character. You know, her struggles of, you know, dealing with loss of family and dealing with, you know, essentially not being a trained weapon, you know, person, a person who could very easily get injured. So the game had a much more emotional arc to it than the original Tomb Raider games. And I enjoyed it a lot. So I was, you know, nervously, you know, hopeful about this particular reboot. I wasn't too keen on the pick of Alicia Vikander for the lead role, but
and
I think that she did a nice job in a mediocre movie. And so I think in many ways the movie has tried to stay a little too loyal to the said reboot, and it's done so, you know, in a game where you have to play for 20, 30 hours to get through the main story, you have a lot more room for kind of, you know, character development moments. And this movie just tried to cram them all into its two-hour running time. It just felt very, very clunky, and it felt very game-like in terms of its storytelling. I don't think they took the opportunity to expand on some of the themes that were there in the original material. So I thought the movie was very mediocre and instantly forgettable. So, you know, just as a kind of a basic intro.
Yes, Steve.
So I think I was the only one who went to see the preview originally, and these were my notes as I was waiting for the movie to begin. It says, waiting for the movie to start. I have zero desire to watch this movie. It seems like a super late arrival to the party. Why do a reboot now? And why the waifish Alicia Vikander? Why any of it?
And then
I came out of the movie very happily, having changed my tune. I actually, maybe it's just all a question of expectations. I expected this movie to be crap, and it's not crap. I think it's reasonably well made. You know, the original Lara Croft with Angelina Jolie came out in 2001. It's been 17 years since then.
Gosh.
A lot has changed, you know, the Me Too movement, you know, how we objectify and see women, the role of women, superheroes, all of that stuff. Taking all of those things into consideration, I still would not have picked Alicia Vikander to play, you know, Lara Croft, but gosh, does she work hard in this movie. She earns every dollar in this movie. They make her work really hard. So I was very pleasantly surprised with this movie. It was engaging. It was competent. I had a ride.
I told you guys. I told you she'd be good. Okay, so no, I don't love Angelina Jolie, and I never played the game Tomb Raider, even though, Joe, you were always playing your games. And I do have an Alicia Vikander bias. So I really thought that this was a fun and fresh way to present Lara Croft, and definitely one that I would be happy to see a sequel of. This isn't War and Peace. It's based off of a game. Manage your expectations, and I think you'll have fun. I think it was adequate in terms of storytelling, and I think when I compare it to the original one, it definitely had something I could hang on to. It's not the best movie of the year, but I agree with Yasti. I think the action and the twists and turns and the breaking of the codes and all of that stuff was really well done.
So you're right. I mean, this must be a case of managing expectations, because I think the game on which it's based, the 2013 reboot, you know, focuses a lot more on Lara's journey in becoming this, you know, warrior that, that she ultimately becomes, yeah. right? So, you know, as laughable as it seems in the game, there are some really big emotional moments in that story, right? Like the first time Lara, you know, finds herself alone, she's frightened. She doesn't know what to do, where to go, how to, you know, get there. So, you know, how to get, make progress. She's found herself shipwrecked. There are moments where she has to become violent for the very first time. And again, the game did a really nice job of taking somebody who was, you know, essentially, ostensibly a very kind of young, sheltered upbringing type girl, and putting her in a situation where, in order to survive, she is forced to murder somebody, which is a huge thing for somebody, you know. Then the game kind of throws that away, and, you know, then you become like, you know, Rambo and kill everybody. But I think I was hoping that the movie would have given us more of those moments. I think it jumped straight into, you know, Lara being a pretty effective killer, a pretty effective, you know, she's able to hold her own almost instantly in this kind of, you know, world of guns and violent men. And I don't know, I was hoping to see more of that. So you're right, it may be expectations that's killing this. But I
never got, sorry, Yastin, you're going to jump in. I never got the feeling that in any of the preamble to the main action occurring that we ever think that she's not able to hold her own. I get the sense that the story is kind of leading us down this path that says... her father made her very self-sufficient. So she's, you know, doing archery as a young child. And we do get that progression. It just happens very quick.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I think the first half hour of the movie, you know, is set in London. And I would have never guessed that, you know, Tomb Raider would be such a British movie. I mean, it has...
Yeah, I didn't either. I was surprised.
You know, she's a messenger and she's, you know, trying to find a place for herself in life. And there's Kristen Scott Thomas, who's always welcome. I, you know, she had threatened to quit the movies for the longest time. I'm so glad she's back. So I kind of, for me, it wasn't a very quick transition. It's not like she suddenly started shooting. I mean, when it did happen, yeah, she was remarkably proficient. I also like that, you know, it's not trying to be anything more. It's not trying to surpass the genre it belongs to. It plays like an old... like a mum, you know, the Brendan Fraser Mummy movie.
Sure.
You know, where it knows it's a well-made, efficient kind of film, you know, an adventure film and nothing more than that. And I think there are a lot of places along as it's going through the adventures where it could have been kind of cheesy, but it kind of avoids being overly cheesy, I think. Now, maybe you may disagree with me, but I think it really avoids a few landmines in that direction. I never felt it was Disney-fied. I never felt it was amateurish. I never felt like, you know, there was any filler material. It all seemed pretty tight to me.
It didn't seem predictable. I mean, although we knew that she's not going to die because she's Lara Croft, it didn't feel predictable to me.
Yeah.
I mean... Well, again, I mean, it comes down to expectation management. And there's a huge contrivance inserted into this because, you know, in the game, a lot of the clues are found by reading little snippets of things that you get left behind and her father's diary and all this kind of thing. Whereas the movie couldn't and opted probably somewhat wisely to not do kind of lots of voiceover type narratives of the history and the past. But it makes a huge contrivance in the reappearance of certain characters that I just couldn't live with. So I did think it was a little clunky, but...
And maybe that's the difference between someone who's played the game and who hasn't. So I think we're much more able to look at it as a movie.
A TV series of it, right?
Yeah.
Interspersed with some gaming moments, but that's basically what I got.
So. Yeah. So why don't you sum up and give us a score?
You know, it wasn't horrible. It was just a little disappointing. And I think I feel like this opportunity to reboot Lara Croft could have been so much more of an emotional journey than it ended up being. It's a fun action movie. I get that that's what they wanted to make here. I just feel a little disappointed that they didn't bring more emotionality to it, which was really the driving force behind the reboot of the things, of the game. So I'm going to give it... an extraordinarily generous 6 out of 10, but honestly, I think it's more of a 5 out of 10 movie for me.
Yes, Dee.
Yeah, I mean, I think there are a couple of things which elevate the movie. One is the action scenes really are very well choreographed. There's a set of scenes which are done by the waterfalls, which in particular were done incredibly well. And to the best of my knowledge, there wasn't a lot of CGI. That is Lara Croft being beaten up and pummeled and falling off things and so forth. So again, good on Vikander. I mean, she really went through the grinder on that. At the end of the day, it's just, I think, a reasonably well-made, old-fashioned adventure film. That's what it is. It's you know, very strongly recommended if you're at the back of a plane and need to kill a couple hours. I give it a 7 out of 10. The only thing I really didn't care for was that the last 10 minutes or so of the movie really, very obviously, like almost annoyingly so, set it up for a sequel. Which I wish they didn't do, but that's okay. It's a minor gripe. So I'm just shocked this movie's running 43% on Rotten Tomatoes. That surprises me because I think it's a far more proficient film than, you know, only having 43% of the reviews be positive.
I agree with Yazdi. So I like the action and the stunts, and I just love how intelligent and fresh this version of Lara Croft is. And if I'm a young girl who wants a role model, I think this Lara Croft is someone to aspire to. It's a really strong girl who kicks ass. I agree with Yazdi 7.
Yeah, and the other thing I liked is, you know, she's not saddled with some, you know, obligatory love interest in the movie.
Agree.
You know, which
I love that they steered clear of that.
They steered clear of that, and that's progress for me.
Yeah.
No, I mean that wasn't there in the source material. And again, cool. I'll speak offline about the big contrivance. But let's move on. Movie number 2. Then I guess should we talk about The Death of Stalin?
Let's talk about The Death of Stalin.
Okay, so
he's dead.
So I'll introduce this one very briefly. This is kind of a political satire, talking about the events of Moscow in 1953, but it's done with a serious twist. All of the actors aren't doing the usual thing that you might see in a historical period piece like this, which is, you know, doing Russian accents, and you know, the movie's done with a very comedic twist, as if these characters all existed within the East End of London more than anything else. So it has kind of it feels to me, from you know, at least it's billed to me as kind of a historical period piece combined with the movie Snatch by Guy Ritchie. But it's directed by Armando Iannucci. I think I said that right.
Yes.
Has a wonderful cast. Steve Buscemi, Jeffrey Tambor. Gosh, who else in here? Everyone's in here. Michael Palin, Rupert Friend, Jason Isaacs, Andrea Riseborough. The list goes on. It's a terrific cast. So, guys, what did you think of The Death of Stalin?
So I have a confession to make. I have not finished seeing the movie, and that doesn't speak to the quality of the film at all. I was actually flying back from the UK, and the movie was released in UK last year, unlike in the US, where it's only now being released. So it was actually showing on the plane. And I happened to see it, and I was very, very, very enthralled by it. And then we were informed that the plane is going to land, and we had to turn off
our... Did you scream?
And I was most disappointed.
Or cry like a girl? No, which one?
No, I screamed. I'm like, no!
Keep us flying!
Yes. Loop around. Let me finish the movie. It's only 20 more minutes. But so I haven't seen all of it. So... I don't know what to say, having not seen the movie in its entirety. I'm dying to see it. I will say that I pray at the church of Armando Iannucci. He directed a movie called In the Loop. He's the Scottish director, and he does political satire just about as good as anyone right now. He has directed and written many, many, many episodes of the HBO series Veep with
Julia
Louis-Dreyfus. Yeah. And he is walking a tightrope here. I mean, this is a very, very serious material, but he sees it as farce, but he never reduces it to comedy. It's kind of, you know, what happened at that time. You're looking at it from a place of horrified kind of amusement. So I think it's a difficult tightrope to walk. I really like the part that I saw.
Well, with some creative license, we should put the asterisk.
Yes, yes. Go on.
Welcome to my favorite movie of the year so far. This is smart and witty and deeply satirical and farcical and funny, funny, funny. What a great idea to make the committee a bunch of Cockney thugs or gang members. This is brilliance, sheer brilliance. I really can't say enough about how much I loved and laughed during this movie. This is Tarantino meets Monty Python wrapped up in Blackadder. And Joe the Snatch reference, I think, is absolutely brilliant. What's most clever about this movie, I think, is it's timely and relevant given the current political situation and what we hear about Russia today. I love this movie. I'm in love with this movie. I can't wait to see it again. Joe, I'm dying to hear what you thought.
Honestly, this movie was far too clever for me. I mean, it really was. It's the kind of biting satirical humor that I think, Rashmi, you are much more of a fan of than I am. I think I found the thing very clever, extraordinarily clever, because what they do is they, accurately depict, they comedically depict things that really happened and potential reactions that many people have. And a lot of this stuff, the screening we went to, they had, somebody from, I think, UCSD.
From UCSD, a professor of, Russian.
Of Russian history.
Of Russian history, yeah.
Who, did a wonderful job kind of relaying to us in the audience, just how spot on this movie's telling of the story is, despite its, comedic and very odd kind of British
sensibility,
actors and sensibility. So, but honestly, I found the thing a little too talky for my taste. It was very funny, but I couldn't help think that the whole time it had a layer of smug direction behind it. It was like, aren't we clever doing this thing? And that thing always rubs me the wrong way. If I detect that, or if I perceive that, then the whole thing is like this to me could have been a skit in a TV comedy to make a full length film out of it. I got tired of the Britishness joke of it by a third of the way through the movie, and then it was just, okay, this is an interesting story. I like the way you're telling it, and you're telling it with very funny lines, but I'm a little bored of the gag.
Interesting. I mean, to me, I think the genius of the movie is the fact that it follows the insecurities and supposed alliances of people as they grapple with the things that they're most afraid of. Their own leadership and the vacuum that's left behind when Stalin dies. And what's interesting to me is that this film's actually been banned in Russia. So that's kind of interesting to me. And I know we don't often talk about,
they don't laugh at themselves politics. Very much.
Yeah, but it's interesting to me that they found it so offensive.
Because it's accurate.
Yeah, maybe. But I just think it's this beautiful, clumsy ballet of people interacting with each other and sort of this whole play of what I should say and what I shouldn't say and what people expect me to say and what I want to say and should I say this now or does that person agree with me? And it's just so beautifully done to me that it's just like a look behind the curtain, that proverbially and metaphorically.
Yeah, not to get too political about this, but it's very relevant to our current times. And, I'm going to speak to my political leanings, but it seems to me like we are barely months away from a despotic, authoritarian regime here in the US. And this movie kind of speaks to how that might come to be. And, forget, put even putting that on the side, what really amazed me, and I think this is steeped in, I haven't gone back and checked how much of it is accurate. I believe it's all accurate. But the sense of how completely precarious each person's position was in this committee. I mean, you say the one wrong thing and you'll get killed.
Yes.
Okay, or somebody in your family says one wrong thing or, wears the wrong kind of signal and you'll be dead. I mean, these people were walking on glass the whole time. And the minute Stalin was compromised, it's amazing how these these power struggles immediately began amongst this group of people. And they're all inept. They're hungry. I'm not hungry. They're ambitious. They're greedy.
Corrupt.
And it's interesting and corrupt. And it's interesting to see how knowing how much of their own personal safety is at stake, they are kind of recognizing everybody else. It becomes like this delicious chess game. Everybody then is taking one step after the other. And it like I said, I mean, it's funny, but I was also horrified the whole time that this actually came to be, that, mm-hmm. you know, people were frankly left with so much power, you know, that one person can make decisions about the death of so many people. And when you have that kind of power, you know, and it that power now is ready for the taking, it makes for a very interesting kind of Lord of the Flies situation.
I mean, it's like the ultimate gangster movie in a sense.
Yeah, I mean, that's essentially the statement the movie is making. I mean, these guys ran like the mafia.
Right.
I mean, they were thuggish. They didn't come across as being particularly bright, although I think that might be a little unfair. I think, you know, you had to have some level of... but again, I don't know the historical real characters. I mean, you know, but it came over as the ultimate in corruption, right? I mean, these are people who wield power as power should never be wielded.
Yeah, I mean, I think just to say a bit more about, like, I think this is fantastically acted, mm-hmm. and I love that each character was just so well formed and larger than the character we just kind of saw the scene before, from like Steve Buscemi as Khrushchev to Stalin's son played by Rupert Friend, and, you know, Jason Isaacs, what a wonderful performance as the lead of the army, and
Jeffrey Tambor.
Yeah, and Jeffrey Tambor was great. I mean, great performances, great direction, great production even. I mean, just the whole Russian palaces and what they experienced in their apartments and the stark difference between that and Eastern Europe. Joe, you called it very talky. I call it musical dialogue that literally had me in fits of giggles long after everyone else, I think, had stopped laughing. I think at one point I was the only person hysterically laughing, and I had to bite myself to stop. I just found this delightful.
Yeah, I'm just thinking in terms of level of difficulty, this is a minefield. There's so many ways this could have, like, come off as tacky or opportunistic or just unfunny or, you know, revisionist. It is a bit revisionist still, but so considering all of that, that it plays like the highest quality political satire, I think speaks to how, you know, how well this has been put together. I really liked it. And I can see how it may come off seeming a little too, you know, smart for its own britches.
So you're going to score it, Yasti, or are you going to wait till
I'm going to wait till I see.
Okay, how many bananas?
Gosh, five. No, 5 out of 5 bananas.
Five out of 5 bananas. So. Okay. Joe?
I'm not going to repeat what I've said before. I mean, again, I think this does not particularly my flavor of things, and that's too bad, because I think I do admire what they've done here. I just found it a little tiresome from a very personal perspective. So, yeah, I'm going to give it a 6 out of 10, but I think the movie in the right circles, Rashmi's and Yazdi's circle, perhaps, does a lot better. But, you know, that just not my kind of thing. I want to see this story. I came back home and I found myself going down a Wikipedia rabbit hole.
Yeah.
Like, you know, absorbing and digesting everything to do with this part of history that I'm not particularly familiar with. I mean, right. We all know, who Stalin was and his regime, but this whole era and what happened, circa the time of his expiration, I thought was fascinating.
Yeah. So
I want to read the history book of this, not the farcical, you know, Blackadder style comedy.
Yeah. So this movie tickled me and educated me, and there is nothing better than that. This is the best Greek tragedy playing in the cinemas today. Rush out and see this. 9 out of 10.
Yeah, it's really good.
This is just, I mean, I would give this a 10 out of 10 just because, you know, it's that good. But I will save my 10 like Yazdi does, because we're so early on in the year.
Yes.
You're not limited to the number of 10s.
I know, but then I feel like, oh, I've given too many.
already.
Yes.
All right. Let's move on to movie number three then, which is Pacific Rim Uprising. And I think, Yazdi, you're going to tell us about this.
Introduce that. So before he got all famous and won an Oscar for Best Director, Guillermo del Toro was in, below the radar, but much beloved, you know, fan who had a big, much beloved filmmaker who had a big cult following from a series of very clever horror slash suspense movies he had made both in Mexico and then in Hollywood. And his kind of calling card to making, you know, a major big Hollywood franchise was the movie Pacific Rim, which came out in 2013. That Guillermo del Toro co-wrote and he also directed, and it starred famously Idris Elba, Charlie Hunnam, and Rinko Kikuchi, amongst others. And it was this big, you know, epic story of, you know, these giant robots who fight the kaiju monsters. And, you know, anybody who is into that monster genre film, you know, it was quite an event. Now, here we are in 2018, about 5 years later, curiously without any kind of an involvement from Guillermo del Toro in the sequel to the movie, which actually speaks to Idris Elba's son. I can't believe that he's had a son within a period of 5 years, who is a fully grown kid. But Stephen S. DeKnight has written and directed this movie, and it stars Scott Eastwood, Clint's son, John Boyega. It also has Rinko Kikuchi again. It has Charlie Day. It has, who am I missing? I think that's the main cast and crew. And the IMDb description for it is that Jake Pentecost, who is the son of Stacker Pentecost, which was played by Idris Elba, reunites with Marco Mori to lead a new generation of Jaeger pilots, including rival Lambert and 15-year-old hacker Amara, against a new kaiju threat. So, new kaiju, yay! So, I didn't see this movie. You guys did. Is Guillermo del Toro
The question is, scared? Did you skip this one on purpose?
Perhaps. But I did like Pacific Rim a lot.
Yeah, you guys loved Pacific Rim.
I liked it. It was very good. Yeah, I did love it. But yeah, I might have skipped this one on purpose. Tell me I was right to do so.
Okay, so I didn't love the original of this movie. And given that one was directed by now award-winning Guillermo del Toro, and given that this is a sequel with Mr. Del Toro not at the helm, I wasn't so excited about seeing this one, Yazdi. In fact, I could have used your notes from Tomb Raider for this one. That said, I actually had a good time at the movies. Oh. I'll let you go, Joe, and then I'll come back.
Yeah, you know, I enjoyed the first Pacific Rim, you know, quite a lot. I just felt that it took itself a little too seriously for the material that it was. And I felt that, you know, Guillermo del Toro is, you know, a very talented director, but he thinks deeply about the meaningness of every visual aspect of his movie. And so Pacific Rim, I remember thinking, was very majestic, but was really fun. It was done a lot in the dark. Mm-hmm. This movie knows its audience so much better than Guillermo del Toro does. He, I think, it lacks the majesty of that movie. I mean, the grandeur and the, you know, we really got a sense of the Jaeger enormity in that first movie. This is going to sound horrible, but this is taken more in a Transformers direction, where the movie's a bit more lighthearted. No, but it's in not. Nice it's. Okay. I mean, the very few good elements of Transformers, which is the awesomeness of robots and the concept. It's more fun than the original. I think it is genuinely more fun. But it lacks that kind of, you know, grandeur that Del Toro brought to it. So instead of, you know, these big important moments and, you know, these speeches, and, you know, there are the speeches, but we just get awesome robot fighting, and it's done really well. The characters don't seem to take themselves too seriously. There's a real fun element to the way that the dialogue is done. And honestly, I think it's a better movie for its audience than the original one was, although I see that it's taken a bit of a kicking in the critical world. But I think It's efficient. It gets in and out quickly. You're not sitting there bored. And there are lots of great monsters, robots versus robots and destruction. But it's not, you know, Transformers can't follow this type of destruction. It's really well choreographed CG fights.
Yeah, I don't disagree with Joe. This felt fresh and it felt more fun. It didn't take itself so seriously. There was actually a bit of comedy in here, which comes with Charlie Day at the driving seat of that. So there's more that you can hang on to, you know, but don't expect more than a Transformers type Godzilla monster-esque action extravaganza, and you won't be disappointed. You know, in a nutshell, this is unlikely an unwanting hero who needs the help of a young girl to save the world. You know, there you have it. Two unlikely people who need each other to overcome an insurmountable task. It's really that basic. I think they've definitely pandered to maybe a younger audience.
Yep.
This is not going to have, you know, the heft, like you said, Joe. And the fact that they've actually used like a child army, in a sense, to defeat the kaiju, mm-hmm. is kind of signal of that to
very
me.
Ender's Game-esque.
Exactly. I wrote exactly that. It's much more Ender's Game or Divergent, you know. But I like the girl power. And I think there's a good message of, you know, team wins over I, and never underestimate the power of friendship, and, you know, where it will come from. And overall, I can sum this one up. I mean, I give it a solid 7 out of 10.
Wow.
Yeah. You know, I think this movie is definitely aimed at kind of a younger, dare I say it, geekier demographic, right? This is your anime fans type movie. And it's not your kind of, you know, thoughtful anime stuff. This is your kind of Saturday morning cartoon type anime.
Yeah.
It's aimed at that audience, and I think it does a really nice job.
Power Rangers.
It's completely at its best when robots are fighting each other.
Yeah.
The other bits are really just there as filler.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, we get lots of it. Like, it starts that way, and it has great battles in the middle, and it has an epic finale, and so it does its job really well. So, why not? 8 out of 10.
Ooh,
I think
wow.
I really, really had fun. I would watch this. I would totally watch this again.
How are the kaiju?
The
monsters.
They're de-emphasized to some extent in this one because it's more kind of robot versus robot. But you know, they're big and they're frightening and you know,
everything's bigger. The scale is bigger.
It feels bigger, but not as, again, the word I used with Del Toro's thing was majestic. Del Toro's, you know, Jaegers and Kaiju, they were big. They moved slowly. They had enormity to them, but they were kind of lumbering, right? These felt like they moved a lot more quick, and they felt more sprightly and energetic, and as a result, the battles felt, you know, less, you know, about one critical blow being dealt, then, you know, these things really fighting, you know.
Yeah, and I think the production felt much more futuristic to me. Like, it felt we were in a much more futuristic world, which was interesting. The visualization of what the future could look like
and
felt much
more fun. There was daylight.
Yeah.
I really, really was upset. Maybe we saw it in 3D. Maybe that was part of the impact, but the original Pacific Rim was all done at night.
Yeah.
And that really, really upset me. Here we've got daylight battles. We can see what's going on.
Yeah.
So. All right. So I guess that's the three movies for this week. So Tomb Raider, Death of Stalin, Pacific Rim, Uprising. Let us know what you think of these movies. Facebook.com/MovieWallahs, Twitter.com/MovieWallahs, MovieWallahs, mail@MovieWallahs.com too. We are doing a series of catch-up podcasts, so you'll probably see them put out over the next couple of weeks. So bear with us as we get caught up with the year. Until our next podcast, too many movies, too little time. Goodbye from me.
And me.
And me as well.